Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're still on the COVID-19 coverage, but we're actually going across further afield than we've been in a while. I'm not even going to introduce Martin because Ashburn is doesn't count this time. We are delighted to be joined via Zoom by Will Holden of the Emergency Logistics Team, the Irish Emergency Logistics Team, who is based in the Kurdish part of Iraq currently. Will, how are you?
Yeah, as I was saying, just kind of bored at the moment.
You're under lockdown, as much as everybody else, is it?
Yeah, well, we've been on full lockdown here for, I think we're going into day 19 as we speak. So we're technically not allowed to drive anywhere. I have been able to get out to go for walks, which I did today, which is fine once you stay locally. But technically, I'm just staying in the apartment I'm in. It's a pretty nice apartment. I've been in far worse on my travels. So the place I'm staying is fine. But I'm here on my own. And it's a long way from home. But it's not too bad. Not too bad.
Well, do you want to give listeners a flavor of like, first of all, like who you are, what you guys do? Because, you know, it's all well and good me saying emergency logistics team. What does that actually mean? And, you know, and given the context of where we are now, I think it's very interesting what it really means.
Yeah, okay. So I'll go back a few steps. So obviously I'm from Dublin. I mentioned I'm from Sonibatra originally, many, many moons ago. But I've worked in supply chain logistics for over 25 years now, which is bonkers when I say it out loud. But I had a normal job back home for a long time. And then up to about the late 2000s, around 2010, then I started getting involved in corporate social responsibility projects with the company I was working with at the time. And in 2010, I actually went to Haiti straight after the earthquake. So 10 years ago now, which is, again, pretty crazy thing to say when I say it out loud. But over a long period of time, I sort of transitioned from senior supply chain logistics management positions into the humanitarian sector, which took me, as I say, to Haiti and a couple of small projects, house building projects. I went to South Sudan in 2012 as the logistics lead on a project, which was a health emergency, funnily enough. Mm. Supplying anti-malarial prophylaxis to parts of South Sudan. I was actually speaking to one of the guys I met back then in 2012, only yesterday, which I'll get onto in a few minutes.
Yeah.
So really over time, I went to Afghanistan 2012, 2013, which was not a humanitarian project. I was the senior logistics advisor on the Afghanistan disposal project for the UK MOD.
Wow.
So that was a reverse logistics project. And again, there was a large element of medical supply chain component there. So they were preparing to depart Afghanistan, which was good. I used to joke with the guys at the time, the British were leaving and they needed the Irish guy to come in and clear up the mess. So that went down very well. So we disposed of things like modular hospitals from various parts of Afghanistan, non-military items, I should hasten to add. Mm. So that was an interesting project in its own right. And then I finished there in 2013, and that's when I'm back in 2013 in Ireland. There wasn't a whole heap of jobs, to be honest, for senior logistics management. It was very thin on the ground. We're still getting through and getting over the last crisis. So I was finishing with the company I was with at the time, and that's when I decided to incorporate the emergency logistics team name. And I had never done this before. I had no idea what I was doing and still don't really know what I'm doing. I just incorporated the name. I had an idea. I could see lots of gaps. As I said, it wasn't a gap in supply chain logistics training. It was a chasm. It just didn't exist. As a sector in itself in the humanitarian world now, which again I'll come on to, because there's a lot of work on that I'm working on right now. So then a chance came to come to Iraq in March 2014, 6 years ago now this month. as the head of logistics for an international non-governmental organization. I thought I was joining that particular project. It was a great learning curve, but I thought it was really just a refugee response, no big drama, even though it was in Iraq, but technically at that time, in early 2014, which is hard to believe now, but things had settled down greatly through many parts of the country. And at the same time, I was keeping tabs on various security things going on, and we heard at the time of this group called ISIS, who were doing a few little causing trouble in various parts of Iraq, but there was nothing of any major significance. Okay, so they weren't even on the radar. And then literally out of the blue, and I mean overnight, no metaphor, literally 24 hours from, I left Baghdad one day in June, got back to Erbil that night, had turned my phone off, woke up the next morning on the Friday, it was Friday, it's Saturday over here, turned on the phone and there's about 50 or 60 messages, missed calls, and I'm going, holy moly, what's after happening here? And that's when ISIS decided to go on tour, cause mayhem. So that was an extreme event, let's put it that way, in many ways. Hundreds of thousands of people moving from all sorts, all parts of Iraq, ended up to where I am here in Erbil in Kurdistan, in North Iraq. It's a semi-autonomous region. To all intents and purposes, has most of its own laws, rules, police and army. Very friendly, very welcoming. The food is too good because I keep putting on weight when I'm here. So everybody came to Kurdistan, everybody who could. So that was a whole story in itself. I was with in Iraq at the time for about a year. And again, that just cemented in my mind the need for formal supply chain logistics training for humanitarian organizations. So then I left. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, Will, when did you see this emergency emerging?
I'll just go back one other step. In 2017, I've gone on a few different projects since, but in 2017, I went to Yemen and I was reviewing the medical supply chain for another international NGO, which took me all over Yemen, but that was specifically for the cholera epidemic. Now, that is very relevant to what we're talking about today. So I could see all the different health and safety protocols that were required, and pretty much everything that we're talking about today everywhere, around the world, literally, which is the insane thing, we had to do in Yemen in relation to cholera. So washing our hands, keeping everything spotlessly clean, over there, for example, cooking food thoroughly, which was always done. Again, the food, everywhere I go, by the way, the food is fantastic. I think that's one of the reasons I like working over here. It's always different and it's always interesting. So I've been back in Iraq since December 2017. I have been working on projects. We have been delivering training, internationally accredited training, which I've done to over 200 people here. And then it would have been in December through the humanitarian community, we would see lots of information, just general information coming from all sorts of different disasters, emergencies, some big, some small, some very localized, some regional, and so on. And then we could see an awful lot of information coming through in relation to this disease called corona, the coronavirus. And very quickly, you pick up, how could I say this, a sense of what's happened. Because instead of just one or two emails and a couple of messages, you're getting lots of emails and lots of messages, you know? So a lot of the narrative in the NGO community was building up really quickly in relation to this, that this was spiraling out of control in China. Just the nature of apparent, at the time, I think in December, everybody was still trying to come to terms with exactly what this was. How long is the period where you could be a transmitter of the disease. I'm not a medical expert now, to be honest. But in China, millions of people are on the move. And I think at the time, if I'm not mistaken, there was a big worry, not so much globally, but about China itself because of the Chinese New Year that was coming up. And I think that's where the initial worry was. And then people very quickly could hear of reports of the same, or people coming down with the same symptoms everywhere in the world in very small numbers. And then I think then all bells were ringing all over the place then early January. So as I said, from then I could see what was going on. Again, nobody really could see that this was going to explode as it has. I'm not going to lie. You know, I've worked on very, very large emergencies. But this one is off the scale, for sure.
So this is...
Go on ahead, Martin. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you've never seen anything like this before, Will. This is beyond anything in your experience, and you've been at some of the really hot spots around the world.
Yeah, this is the biggest. Well, let's be honest, and I have, it's one of the things I try to do because I'm an expert in my field, emergency management, supply chain management. That's what I do. That's what I'm good at. I was good at that in commercial, and I was good at that in humanitarian. So that's fine. What I'm not good at is, I said, I'm not a medical professional. So I try and read up as much as I can, as quick as I can, to get an idea of what it is I'm talking about. So I did the same in Yemen, 2014, various other places, or 2017 in Yemen, in relation to cholera, and just try and understand how is it transmitted, what's the basic things you need to do to make sure you don't get cholera. I learned, for example, in relation to cholera in Yemen, that one of the reasons why the international, I don't like using the word expat, I find it very annoying, to be honest. So the international people working on the response in Yemen did not receive any cholera medication. And the reason being is that they wanted to keep that for the people who really needed it. And I learned just locally, and the things you learn locally sort of keep you going, is that if you're a Western guy who was very well fed, that's the best way of putting it, that if you got cholera, you'd probably just end up on the toilet for a couple of days. You will be seeing the best doctors, you will be rehydrated, and so on. So you will survive, you will go through a little bad patch, but it won't kill you. Where in relation to cholera, the people that will kill are people who are already suffering from severe malnutrition or who have already got some very other diseases and so on. So I understood that. So then when it came to this one back in January, I was sort of scrambling to learn a few things. And one of them was the Spanish flu of 1918-1919. So I've literally been cramming this. So while it is unprecedented for us, it's not unprecedented. It is precedented. It has happened before. And it's happened, as I said, in 1918-1919 over an 18-month period, where anything between 50 and 100 million people died because of a flu-like virus. It's not the flu, but a flu-like virus, which is apparently got some connection to what's going on today around the world. But at the time, nobody had a clue. There was none of the medical support. There was none of the medical expertise. There was no scientists around who understood the nature of viruses at the time. And that's why a lot of people died. Whereas today, a lot of people will survive. We were not going to see the numbers that we did in 1918, but we're going to see big numbers. But there's a huge amount of innovation and improvement in medical response that's, you know, light years ahead of what it was 100 years ago. So I've tried to read up and understand exactly as much as I possibly can what is exactly happening in the world today. So the thing that worries me, to be honest, is not me in Iraq. I've been through emergencies. I've been on lockdowns. I've been on lockdown in relation to health emergencies. I've been on lockdowns because there's fighting outside the door. So I got the emergency thing. I've been through those situations. What worries me, the people back home, my family back home, who have not been through this, they do not understand what this is. And there's a huge amount of fear when these are happening, even for me. So I can control my fear if I'm going through the emergency, but I don't tell anybody. You deal with it yourself. You tell people on a need-to-know basis, so people back home don't worry. That's how it's always been up to right now. We're at the moment now, it's the people back home who are going through this. And they're the people I'm sort of more concerned about.
Well, can I come in and just, like, I suppose you mentioned the Spanish flu, and I definitely wouldn't have read as much as you have, but am I right in saying that they just called it the Spanish flu because a year after it was kicking around in Kentucky, where they reckon it came out of originally, they were blaming Spanish soldiers for spreading it, and you know it was to that level where we didn't know. Whereas now, at least. I know this sounds dreadful, but some of the steps that are being taken, the steps that are being taken are unprecedented. You know, we are literally seeing a global lockdown in many respects. Like India is one sixth of the world's population is under lockdown. Do you think we're doing this is the right thing now?
Yes. So again, not a medical expert, but from what I've learned, and I'm talking about literally from an operational supply chain support point of view. Mm. And I've worked in medical device, the med tech life science industry on the commercial and humanitarian. So I actually do know quite a lot of it about this. There isn't enough equipment available. There isn't enough testing kits available. So the countries are struggling to come to terms with how can we at least slow down the spread of the disease in order to just give the hospitals a breather. That's all this is. This is not going to stop anything. It's still going to happen. It's going to happen slower. And again, slowing down the spread of the virus will give the medical community a chance to procure all the goods that's required. Like we hear about the nurses, frontline staff who don't have PPE, for example, in Ireland. It's not just Ireland, it's everywhere in the world. So that's what we're trying to do. I think that's what the governments are trying to do, not we. That's what the governments everywhere are trying to do. It's the same here in Kurdistan. Mm. So the guys have a full lockdown because it's literally the only step any country can take to slow down the spread of this disease. That's all this is. It's not going to stop the spread of disease.
On that salient point, with there not being enough, you talked about your work in supply chains. Keeping those open, I'm assuming, is essential throughout this. I'm hearing reports of, say, for example, Aer Lingus flying passenger planes as cargo, effectively, to try and bring PPE in. These are the things that we need to see done rapidly, because and then the other thing is, in terms of your own work in crisis areas, how do you know communication is that something that is important with the general population, or is it something that you just muddle through?
No, I tell you, firstly, in relation to the supply chains, these are happening all the time. Okay, so as I said only a couple of weeks ago, I said 2 months ago, very few people in the world understood, what a supply chain is, or even the basic understandings. It's something you'd read, or might be something in the news, or in some kind of financial report. Mm. By the end of this whole disaster, humanitarian disaster, we're going to have a world full of supply chain experts. Okay, which is no harm. Because at least it will give people an understanding of what a supply chain is, how complex it can be. And the fact that the supply chains are global is not a problem. Okay, that's not the problem. As someone said, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. And there's lots of reasons why the supply chain spread out over the last 25 years, from whether it was America to Ireland, of which Ireland has been a great beneficiary in relation to the life science industry, pharmaceutical, medical device manufacturing, very, very high-end, well-paid jobs, lots of taxes into the economy. So Ireland has benefited greatly from that element of globalization. So that's not the problem. The problem is what's called lean supply chains. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go into this too much detail, but the whole point of lean supply chains is that companies and manufacturers on all sides have as little inventory as possible in order to manage their cash flow as best they can. So in very simple terms, if you spend $1 million on masks, okay, and you purchased them 5 years ago, that's $1 million of your cash gone. Plus then you've got to pay for all the storage, and they're just sitting there waiting for something that may or may not happen. So who pays for that cash? Who pays for those bills? Okay. So the whole point of lean supply chains is they're made to order. Some parts are made on a very short lead time, and some parts, you know, they're sort of general. So the mask would be general, but you don't need masks for every single person in the world. So there's never the need for this. So there's bound to be, as we call them, supply chain and production constraints. And that's where we are right now. Now, they will ramp up very quickly, for sure. That's how it works. So the supply chain is very flexible to a point, okay? But to a point that there has to be a realization that there's only so much business, there's only so much businesses can do to ramp up. So one concern I have, and I actually saw a post a short while ago, which sort of ties into this, is ramping up is one thing, but are we supplying the quality equipment required for use in the area it has to be used in? Okay, so the mask you use for doing your painting in your house or stripping the wall is not the same type of mask you would use in a hospital. Very different specifications, okay? So, for example, I am right now, I've been asked to try and source one specific part for face mask production in China, and I'm working with a supplier in Austria and a producer in Turkey to get them to China. Okay, now that's supply chain, okay, in action. So the Irish guy in Iraq is trying to sort all this stuff out. That's a very technical piece of raw material. You cannot just pick that up off the high street, okay? So the concern I have is not so much that masks are being supplied, but are the masks of the correct quality? Now, I actually saw a post moments ago before we started speaking about a large quantity of masks arrived into Spain over the last couple of days and from China. And they do not work.
Wow, that's unreal.
And that could cause a much bigger problem, because you're going to have people then wearing masks thinking that they have some kind of cover, and they actually don't.
That is unreal. That is unreal. Yeah.
So I'm always saying, just everybody, yes, we need to ramp up. I guarantee you, I know many people in the medical, med tech production community. I know this is happening. But you cannot press a button and happen in 24 hours. It takes time, but it will happen.
So you have to change your supply chain from a just-in-time supply chain to something completely different.
Very much so. Very much so. So again, depending on what the products are, what the companies would produce, they can easily change some of the production. Say, face masks is a big one. It's not just face masks. There's a whole range of other equipment, medical devices required for the COVID-19 response. There's many of them. We can see the obvious ones, but there's many more. So the respiratory devices and so on.
I'm reminded, Will, sorry, of the. Do you remember the big freeze that we had, and everybody went mad when there wasn't enough salt? So we did go out and buy tons and tons of salt, and of course we haven't had that big freeze since. But we still have, you know, there's lads going out in the mornings now. It's going. Bit of frost on the window. Throw some salt down. Jesus, we've mountains.
Exactly. Yeah. Salt everywhere. Salt for everybody.
Yeah. So
it's Oprah Winfrey. Salt for everybody.
But look, that's really fascinating that you're able to give us that insight into how. First of all, you know, the work that you do is very interesting, and just to see that you've been doing it for as long as you have, and in the hot spots that you have, I kind of feel a little bit more informed about it. And I know we don't want to be negative here, but have you any sort of things that you think we should be doing that we're not, that you're not seeing enough of right now? You know, what steps, what levers would you think should be pulled that aren't being pulled?
I follow World Health Organization guidelines all the time in relation to any health emergency. That's how it works. They're the experts. They're doing this a long, long time, okay? They have, while most 99.999% of the population in the world, this is their first introduction to this type of thing, they are the experts. They do this all the time. Much smaller scale, but the same protocols you would put in place for the Ebola response or cholera are exactly the same, except it's just on a bigger scale. So listen to the World Health Organization. And by and large, I know the Irish government, or temporary government, or whatever we want to call the government, are following the advice. And I can see, and again, I'd be more reticent than others to criticize. And the reason being is that I've worked in emergencies. And in an emergency, you're literally running to stand still, okay? In an emergency, you make some good choices, you make some bad choices. In an emergency, you get some things right, you get some things wrong. What you do not do, what you should not do, is beat yourself up over. You just figure out, what did I do wrong? How do I fix it? Fix it now, move on, and that's it. You do not worry about it. You have no time, okay? You can beat yourself up 6 months from now and we're all over this. But for now, I'm just a little bit more, how would you say, giving them a bit more leeway than I think a lot of other people.
So here we've had a government for the last 10 years who don't particularly like to make decisions on anything. Yeah. So you're saying that what you need to do is make decisions, make them fast, move on, and don't worry about the decisions you've made. In other words, a real chair or a real time decision is better than an armchair decision a month later.
No use. You have to react now.
You have to react.
Like, I literally, we do it in our training. In the training I've done here, all my training is finished at the moment, by the way. So if anybody wants to reach out for any advisory support remotely, they can, because I'm trying to fill my own business. My business is actually at a stop, at a standstill, but that's a separate point. But we do it in our training. We literally talk about this. We act first, think later.
Mm. Okay.
That's how we say it.
One more question I have for you on this, Will. You've said, and you've been in situations where there's been outbreaks of different things. Where do you see the end of this? Because we get a lot of talk here in this country at the moment. This will all be over by September. We'll be back to normal. There's a lot of talk about getting back to normal. From what I'm reading about it, there's no getting back to normal. This is not going back to normal. What's your opinion on it?
We're going to get a new normal. That's what we've got to remember, okay? So as I've said to a few people, and I'm actually at the beginning of writing a book about emergencies, by the way, because of I've got time. I never had before. But I say to people, especially people not familiar with this, there will be a normal, just a new normal will be the normal. That does not mean it's a bad normal. You've got to remember this, okay? That maybe, well, obviously what we're going through now is a humanitarian disaster, and there's a lot of people going to lose their lives. But all the work we do, all the habits we get into now, may not just save lives now, but in the future, long after this is over, okay? So whether it's in relation to cleanliness, cleaning ourselves, cleaning our homes, maybe as I said to somebody, Howard Hughes was right all along, you know, just to be ultra clean on everything. So the new future should not be too much of a worry. We just need to get through the next few days, the next few weeks, piece by piece. That's what we should be looking at. Now, I also think, again, just from all the conversation I hear from all the scientists and the people way more educated than I am, there's all sorts of testing coming in order either to check that you have the disease now or that you've had the disease before. So these things are going to happen very quickly, and it's going to ramp up very quickly. So it's not 1918, okay? It's not an 18-month thing, I do not think. I think all the protocols that are put in place now, whether it's here in Kurdistan, whether it's at the airports, whether it's restricting movement and so on and so on, they have to be relaxed, because we do have to get the balance between saving people's lives but also economy. If we don't have an economy, you know, it actually does cause a whole range of other problems, which we don't want either. So any restrictions that we're going through now should be time limited, but also then at the very same time, the government, in conjunction with the medical experts should be coming up with new ways of working, new advice on how to work, how to travel, how to interact, how to work in a shop. But once we learn these things, they will become the new normal very quickly.
Well, yes. Thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with us. Listen, I'm just going to, I'll go ahead and plug it, Will. It's emergencylogisticsteam.com. You might as well get the plug out, mate, because the work you do, you definitely have enough experience to give plenty of advice on issues like this. And, you know, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Yes, cheers, Will. Guys. Keep your head down over there and stay safe.
And you do too, actually. That's something I haven't thought I'd ever have to say in my life, but there you go. Take care, guys.
Well, I'm being Howard Hughes at the moment out in Ashburn.
I like it. So. Stay safe. Stay safe, pal.
Thanks, Will.
Cheers.
Bye.